This week on Beyond Stillness, Stories After Stroke, we spotlight guest Tia Palafox, a school counselor, tennis player, music lover, and community volunteer who suffered a stroke in 2009 at the age of 40. Tia shares ways she strives to accept her post-stroke self. Tia was often called Superwoman before the stroke and continues to push herself now. Her story is entitled Moving Toward Acceptance. Thank you for joining us for part two, Tia Palafox's interview. Hello and welcome to Beyond Stillness. Stroke offers a powerful, life-changing shift in perspective. Each colorful memory creates a parable for life's greater teachings, a compass for journeys ahead, and inspired wisdom for unique growth. This radio show, Beyond Stillness, offers an hour of pause for storytelling and reflection. Ultimately, Beyond Stillness is a welcoming environment that reveres the moment beyond stroke's paralysis. Still moments unite humanity and divinity. I'm your host, Molly Bucola. Tia Palafox is a retired school counselor who lives in Portland, Oregon. In 2009, she suffered a stroke on the right side of her brain. She's a music lover, a community volunteer, and is very social. Lots of friends. Her story is entitled Moving Towards Acceptance. But before we begin, we take a moment of pause to call to mind parts of ourselves that yearn for not just tolerance, but patience, love, and acceptance. We think of parts of our minds, parts of our body, parts of our emotions, our relationships that yearn for acceptance. We ask for the grace and courage to see ourselves as whole and complete. Welcome, Tia.
Thank you.
You gave a little anecdote about your put-together self apologizing to the paramedic in the ambulance, Tia, for your socks not matching your pajamas on your way to the hospital as you're having your stroke. The initial moments of a stroke are so disorienting, yet our unique selves are able to shine through those moments. What are some ways that your put-together self aided your recovery process?
The first thing I think about is that I do know what I'm capable of doing, and I am constantly pushing myself. I'm working at being the best person I can with this disability, and I think that is kind of the cycle I'm in. I want to come to acceptance, but I sometimes think I'm just pushing to be the old me, and I push myself pretty hard as my answer. I feel like that's almost just an innate personality of myself, is to be put together and successful. I've had to push myself pretty hard my whole life with having a lot of different adversities in life, not just my stroke. And from early on, I've had to really push myself to accomplish the things that I wanted to do, and I feel like that's just part of my personality, is to get through adversity and get to where I want to be, but to be who I am. I'm not trying to be anyone different. And I'm not trying to impress anyone. It's hard to explain it. Like, I want to be transparent and the true me, but I've always been a fighter. Like, I've always worked really hard to get where I am.
Mm.
I don't know if that makes sense. I've always had to work really hard for each step of the way, I guess, and if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Shirley Howell offered her story on this show, and she said that she started asking herself, instead of why me to have the stroke, she said, why not me? My has set me up to be able to overcome this. And it sounds like what you're saying is throughout your whole life, you've encountered adversities and you've worked hard to overcome those. And those were part of the preparation for this. And now you're using that to help you move forward.
Yes, true. Thank you.
Wow. No, thank you.
I couldn't quite put it into words, but that's, yes. Thank you.
You did. Are you willing to share any of the other adversities that you overcame as an example?
Okay. Well, like many people, I had quite a bit of dysfunction in my childhood. And I was encouraged not to move on to college, but I really wanted to go to college. And so I had to figure out how to get to college by myself. And I moved out of the house and went to college with basically just supporting myself and making it on my own at 17.
Wow.
So I was a little bit older then. There was other things I would have to really go back to my childhood traumas, and we would need a few weeks to do that. So I feel like everything that I went through, it just made me a stronger person. So I don't have any regrets or ill feelings towards anyone. I'm just a strong person because of the different little things I went through as a kid. And then finally making it to college, it was a really big deal for me to move out and to go to college.
Mm.
I just had to be strong and figure out myself.
Yeah. Wow. And Tia, then you go to college, you go to grad school, you get your master's to become a school counselor, to then work with people that are going beyond high school. You were a high school counselor too at the end there. So to reach back to people at that same age where you were struggling, what a beautiful way to spend your time.
Yes. Thank you. I had the best career, and that is why I went into school counseling, because I really wanted to make a difference in young people's lives, as my school counselors did that for me.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Towards the end of your story, Tia, you mentioned how sad you were when the doctors had cut your hair. People responded, at least you are alive. And I know that that is a fairly common response for stroke survivors to hear, because there are many people who suffer stroke that don't survive. But I'm thankful that you mentioned the thoughts and emotions that accompanied that phrase, at least you're alive. Will you expand on that a little bit for us?
I think that one statement, at least you're alive, and there's others, where I feel like people who haven't had a stroke, or they don't truly understand, or they didn't truly understood what I was feeling at that moment. But I was always forgiving, because I understood people were trying to relate and not sure how to respond.
Mm.
And so when people would say things like, oh, I also had a hip replacement, and they would assume, you know, that I had something that they had gone through.
Mm.
I just knew that they were trying to relate and didn't know how to respond. And so I just would smile and say thank you a lot. And if people did want to know about, if people do want to know what happened, they'll ask, and I'm happy to take the time to explain the stroke and a brain injury, because I feel like us who are stroke survivors can educate other people on it. So I'm pretty forgiving, but it at first, it did make me feel just unheard. And that's really, I didn't ever get super frustrated. I really felt unheard and not understood.
Yeah.
But as more and more people were doing that, as I got more into my recovery, I decided to have a different outlook on that, to try to educate and feel okay about it.
Hmm. you have patience and you're an empathetic person.
Yeah.
I wonder, what do you wish that someone would have said to you in that moment?
Probably something like, that sounds really hard.
Yeah, validating it. This advice transcends stroke. That goes for other life situations.
Right.
And I like that you said, that sounds really hard, because that validates what someone is going through. Thank you, Tia.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. While lying in bed, you said that you learned to go back to work, but you were unable to even express it. So you knew in that moment in the hospital, you knew you wanted to go back to work, but you couldn't express it. And when finally returning to work, 2 years later, you mentioned that you had so many hoops that you had to get through. And you mentioned the program Community Resources Service Orient helped you prepare to go back to work. Share a little bit about that program. And my guess is there are other programs like that throughout the country.
Community Resources Service Oregon was in Eugene, Oregon. And I heard about them through the hospital. And there was it was a very small agency. I think only 5 people worked there. And each person had a different task. And I met with people who, they had a counselor there who helped me through the mental health part of things. And then there was someone who helped me with memory and doing memory activities that were so difficult. I can still remember where someone would read an article out of a magazine, and I would have to count backwards by like 20. And then after I would accomplish counting backwards, then I would have to repeat what they said to the magazine. It was basically impossible. But I had to do that for hours, like listening to magazine articles, counting, and then repeating back what they said. So I really worked hard to get my memory back, because I had short-term memory at the time. So that was one task that I had. Other tasks that I had would be reading and comprehension, which would be reading out of a book and then taking little short quizzes on what I read to see if I comprehended the reading. And then I had to do a lot of items on how to tell time and count, because that was the last thing I learned in the hospital was how to tell time. And so I had to work on that. The clock that has the hands, it was so hard for me for some reason. I just could not figure out how to tell time. And I graduated once I learned how to tell time again, and it took a long time. It was really difficult. So I really want to get back to work. And even though it's working with people, and I knew I could do that, have the empathy and work with all the kids, I had to pass that neuropsychology test. And to pass that test, you needed these kind of skills.
That sounds really frustrating and difficult.
It was that.
Community Resources Service Oregon. They also help you develop those skills to pass those tests?
Yes. Yeah. We did a lot of practicing, and there was a lot of tears. They were this small agency. They were just so loving and so supportive. I got so frustrated so many times, and yes, lots of tears. And I can feel the tears right now because it was really hard. I worked really hard and longed to get back to work. I think it really did. I was 40, and I think being young and having that support and them pushing me so hard really did help me recover to where I am at now.
Tia, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotion that goes along with recovery.
Yeah. Yes.
And frustration. I remember a specific moment sitting on the floor with a physical therapist, and for weeks we had been working on putting paper clips into the box, and I could only use my left hand.
Uh-huh.
Weeks. And it would just my hands would freeze in a specific position. Maybe I couldn't pick the paperclip up because it was frozen like a fork. Or maybe I got the paperclip, but then I couldn't release my finger and my thumb to release the paperclip into the box. Or maybe I couldn't get my arm over the box, whatever it was. So when I finally got all of the paperclips in the box, I was so stoked. I was so excited that I did it. And I had this big smile and I laughed with the therapist. And then she picked it up and dropped all of them out and said, okay, do it again. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Let's just celebrate for a minute, please.
So much practice.
Yeah, so much goes into it. You said that you finally went back to work as a school counselor, which was a major sense of relief for you because you had your identity wrapped up as a hard worker and a school counselor. As we age and go through experiences in our lives, our identity in some ways stays the same, but in other ways it changes. How has your identity remained the same since your stroke?
I am still a very social, outgoing person. Mm-hmm. And although I'm not a career woman, like I really felt like that was me. Up through 40, I got my job really young. I was in my 20s when I started my career in school counseling. Mm-hmm. So for about 20 years, I felt like me was a school counselor. And so I always felt like such a hard worker and so good at that job. And so what I'm saying now is that I am putting all that energy in being the best volunteer that I can be. So I still feel like a hard worker, but it's in volunteer work. Mm-hmm. And in my volunteer work, I'm very social. I'm very human oriented. I'm a people person. And that all has stayed the same.
Mm. How do you think your internal identity has changed since your stroke?
One thing that I really think is a positive for me in having this stroke is I now know what it feels like to be disabled in a very abled world. Mm-hmm. And feel blessed in some ways that I can really empathize with people who has a disability. I see how inaccessible things are and try to speak out when I see inaccessibility and point things out to different workplaces and public places when it's not accessible and try to make differences here and there, but I also feel stronger, but I also feel less confident. It's like a big mixture of things. It's hard to explain because there's positives and negatives.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe how your identity has changed since you had your stroke. It sounds like, again, it comes up, you are a fighter, and maybe not just a fighter, but you are persistent and work hard to overcome and work hard to help others. When you say that you see accessibility to be able to say something, that then makes it better for other people. I met with Nick Clark, who was a professional soccer player, but he's in the UK, so they call it football. And now he works for the team, making sure that the stadiums and the football games are accessible for people like him, because he wants everyone to be able to have that experience because it's something that feeds his passion, his life. So thank you.
Yeah.
This actually feeds right into my next question. You briefly mentioned the challenges of being a disabled person. When I first met you, you said that you have an idea for creating a podcast yourself. You want to share stories about navigating travel as a disabled person. You love to travel near and far. You talked a little bit about that in your story and have found ways to do so despite the obstacles. Please share a little more about your podcast idea and a couple travel experiences that you would want to share with your podcast listeners.
I do love traveling. I like adventuring and seeing things outside of my own city. And so I really wanted to get out there. And I went to see family shortly after I was discharged from the hospital. I mean, maybe, I think it was 10 months after my discharge, I went. And it was really difficult because I was still in a wheelchair. And I was with my family, so they really helped me. But then after we did it, I really felt like I can do this and started traveling on my own. And once I started traveling on my own, I realized that I could maneuver the airports pretty well. And if I just would request wheelchair assistance and the aisle seat of the airplane, and I was just picking up the tips here and there on how to work with the wheelchair assistants and how to get the wheelchair assistants. And I keep making notes of things when I'm in airports and on planes and trying to get to my destination on how I think it was difficult for me and it's a challenge, but how to actually get it done and how to get to the place I wanted to be. And so I was feeling like I could share how things were working for me as I was traveling to different places via airplane, and thought I could maybe make that into a podcast where I could share some of my tips about traveling with a disability.
I love that, Tia. I was in a support group recently and someone shared tips on how to rent a car because they needed a special pedal. And one of the people in the group said that they couldn't go visit their family member because they couldn't get there with the car. They couldn't figure that stuff out. And someone else in the group started sharing tips on how to get assistance for the rental cars.
Oh, okay.
Other people in the group, their eyes lit up. And I really think there's a need for your idea. You are a pioneer. You're going out and just trying to ask all the questions and figure out how to make it work for yourself.
Yeah.
And not everyone has the courage to do that without having the knowledge of what they need in advance and how they can get it. And I really think that your podcast idea would be helpful to many.
I hope so. I really hope I can get going on that.
Thank you. Me too. You also mentioned that you have a book idea. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to write a book. The reason I came up with the book idea is my sister, who's 7 years younger than me, was just so nervous and scared, I think, when I had this stroke at 40. Everyone thought that was young at the time and couldn't believe that happened to me as I was young and very fit and healthy. And my sister said she was searching and searching for anything to read and anyone to help her understand what I might be going through. And this might make me cry too, because just thinking about her being concerned and scared, it's really tough for me to hear her tell me how she was feeling after this stroke. But what she told me is she was searching for anything to read, any publications, any support on how to help me, what's happening. And when she was looking for books, all she could really find was information about senior citizens or people like who are older having strokes. And she didn't find anything that she could relate to with her 40-year-old sister who had just had a stroke. And so that really gave me some motivation to put something together myself for people to maybe learn more about surviving a stroke and recovering a stroke when you're younger. I mean, I don't think 40 is the youngest. I mean, I know there's people having strokes younger than that, but at least I could maybe add to the book list of having a stroke, surviving and recovering a stroke in your 40s. So that's what I would hope to do.
Yes. I think every individual story can somehow bring light to other people who are in relationship to stroke in some way.
Yeah.
In your case, you're talking about your sister wanting to know more. And then some people, it's the stroke survivors themselves. I was 21. Towards the end of my therapy, I remember showing up
for my appointment. By that time, I was at outpatient therapy, and they asked if I was a volunteer. And I was like, really? You know, everyone in the support groups, everyone was older, and I didn't know. So I think that your voice as a 40-year-old would be very powerful.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tia.
Thank you.
Before we close here, Tia, let's take a moment to call to mind those parts of ourselves again that need to be held. Maybe they're emotions. Maybe it's feelings of loss, grief, emptiness. Let us fill those with love and acceptance and light, knowing that in those places, we can connect with others who may also experience loss. Help us to help each other fill those spaces, love those spaces, accept those spaces, and give grace to those spaces. May we see ourselves as whole. May we see ourselves in relationship to others as whole. Help us to see these as opportunities to connect, to share, to inspire, and to love. Again, thank you, Tia, for sharing today.
Thank you.
Thank you for devoting time and space to listen to part two, Tia Paula Fox's interview. For the full story, please listen to part one, Tia Paula Fox's story. Each colorful memory creates a parable for life's greater teachings, a compass for journeys ahead, and inspired wisdom for unique growth. In this episode of Beyond Stillness, guest Tia Paula Fox offered her story entitled Moving Toward Acceptance. She shared about how she has found new ways to engage in activities she loved before the stroke, along with other tools she employs to work toward self-acceptance. If you enjoyed this moment of pause for storytelling and reflection, please like, share, or subscribe to the Beyond Stillness Stories After Stroke podcast. Again, thanks for listening. And remember, as part of the stroke community, you are more than supportive. You are inspirational.
If you are part of the stroke community and have a story you'd like to share on the show, please contact us, email molly@beyondstillness.org.